Welcome to the HN Pod, your daily deep dive into the front page of Hacker News. It's April 11th, 2025.
And today we're sifting through some of the biggest discussions bubbling up in the community.
Yeah, it's that typical Hacker News mix, isn't it? Tech developments, big ideas, maybe a few unexpected turns.
Absolutely. We're looking at product design philosophies, some pretty heavy stuff around content moderation, software integrity, and even a live look at the London Underground.
It's quite the range. Our mission today, as always, is to give you, our listener, a shortcut, get you up to speed on what the tech world is chewing on right now.
Without having to read every single comment thread.
Okay.
Let's jump in.
Okay, first up, this article that got a lot of traction. But what if I want a faster horse? Classic quote, obviously.
Right, the Henry Ford thing, supposedly. But this piece uses it to talk about, well, a real tension in tech today.
Which is?
It's that gap between what users say they want, or maybe even what they think they want, and where companies actually steer product development.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
And how did the discussion approach that?
Well, one really interesting angle was using web browsers as an analogy. You know, the whole evolution from Netscape, then IE, Firefox, Chrome.
Uh-huh.
The point made was, the average person wasn't exactly screaming for a new browser most of the time.
Right. So how did the change happen then?
It was often driven by enthusiasts, you know, the tech-savvy crowd.
Hmm.
The article actually quotes this. The change was driven by enthusiasts recommending the latest and greatest to their less technically inclined friends and family.
That makes sense. Word of mouth from the people who care most about the tech itself.
Exactly. And it leads to this core insight, which I thought was pretty sharp. Everyone is a connoisseur of something. It's just that for any given individual, that something probably isn't your product.
Ooh, I like that. So your user might be an expert on, I don't know, coffee brewing, but they just want their spreadsheet software to work. They're not a connoisseur of spreadsheet features.
Precisely. And this creates a challenge, doesn't it? Especially for, say, SaaS companies. The discussion touched on how their financial models, focused on growth and maybe ad revenue,
might push them away from catering to those niche enthusiast needs.
Yeah, towards features that maybe maximize broad engagement or ad views, even if it annoys the original passionate users.
We see that play out, don't we? Like with streaming services, the comments section brought up Netflix.
Oh yeah, that was a big thread. People talking about subscribing just to watch one specific show or season.
And then canceling immediately after they binge it.
Right. Which is, you know, totally rational user behavior maybe, but
yeah.
It clashes with the whole SaaS idea of building long-term customer lifetime value, doesn't it?
Definitely. It's like two different games being played. And then there was the whole debate about ad-supported versus ad-free tiers.
Mm-hmm. The argument that maybe they don't even really compete, that people who hate ads will pay to avoid them, and others, well, they won't.
And someone pointed out the economics that Netflix's ad tier is apparently bringing in more revenue per user now.
Yeah, which, if true, kind of explains some of the pricing strategies and maybe even interface changes we're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
It's driven by the need to make that ad model work.
So bringing it back to the faster horse, the idea is users might ask for small improvements.
Like a slightly better interface, maybe.
When what's really needed, or what would be truly innovative, is something fundamentally different, like the car instead of the faster horse.
Exactly. Incrementalism versus a real leap.
Yeah.
And the article talked about this cycle you see in tech.
The enthusiast phase, then VC funding, then broadening appeal.
And potentially losing those initial enthusiasts along the way. It happens again and again, unless a company actively chooses a slower, more niche-focused growth path.
Which is rare when big money gets involved, I guess.
Often, yeah. And this ties into something, the discussion called analytics abuse.
Ah, tell me about that. Sounds ominous.
Well, the idea is that in big companies, teams are often judged on moving short-term metrics. So they make lots of small changes, and maybe each individually shows a tiny uplift in some KPI.
Okay.
But the cumulative effect of all these tiny optimized changes can actually make the product worse overall, especially for the long-term passionate users. It erodes the core appeal.
Like death by a thousand cuts, optimized cuts.
Pretty much. Each step makes sense locally, but the global picture suffers.
Were there any suggestions on how to fix that?
Yeah, some interesting ideas, like maybe weighting feedback from your power users more heavily.
Mm-hmm.
Or even creating like negative KPIs demerits for changes that demonstrably annoy loyal users.
That's interesting. Actively penalizing annoying your base.
It's about balancing that broad appeal with keeping the core happy. The discussion also briefly touched on search, using Amazon as an example.
Oh, the eternal struggle of finding things on Amazon.
Right. The tension between wanting efficient, targeted search versus the platform wanting you to discover things through its algorithms.
Yeah, sometimes I just want the thing I search for, not 12 related items.
It's that faster horse thing again, in a way. Is the answer just a slightly faster search algorithm, or is it fundamentally rethinking discovery versus direct finding?
Good point. The conversation also drifted into music, streaming, Spotify, Apple Music.
Uh-huh. The usual debates. Library size versus recommendation quality, discovery features, that constant balancing act.
And the whole fragmentation issue came up again. Content scattered everywhere.
Leading to frustration, maybe even pushing people back towards, well, piracy or other ways to get everything in one place.
There was also that slightly depressing term mentioned, premium mediocre.
Yeah, the idea that content gets optimized purely for engagement metrics, not necessarily for, like, artistic quality or depth. Just good enough to keep you scrolling or watching.
Bleak. And maybe that's driving some of Netflix's changes. The need to just keep people hooked, keep those subscriber numbers stable.
Could be. The need to monetize the existing base when massive growth slows down. And of course, the comparison to TikTok inevitably came up.
The ultimate engagement machine. Everyone's chasing that level of stickiness.
For sure. And then, stepping back, some commenters took a more critical systemic view.
Oh, so.
Arguing that this whole trend, sometimes called enshittification online.
Right, that term's everywhere now.
It's basically just capitalism working as expected in mature markets. Companies prioritizing shareholder value and profit extraction over user experience once growth peaks.
A pretty stark take on it. It definitely frames the whole faster horse problem in a different light.
It does indeed.
Yeah.
Okay, so shifting gears quite a bit now. Let's talk web standards. Might sound dry, but it has real-world effects.
Right, this article. Default styles for H1 elements are changing. Okay, break this down. What's changing with headings?
So basically, browser makers, starting with Firefox, it seems, are tweaking the default CSS, the styling for H1 tags, when they appear inside section elements in HTML.
Okay, why?
The goal seems to be to remove some of the browser's magic default styling. They want developers to take more explicit control. Semantically, the idea is that an H1 inside a section should sort of function like an H2 in the overall document outline.
So less automatic styling, more developer responsibility for making the structure clear through CSS.
That's the gist. Encourage better semantic structure, make developers think more about the hierarchy.
But didn't this cause some heartburn in the comments? I saw talk about testing nightmares.
Yeah, someone raised a fair point. If this change rolls out gradually, like only 5% of Firefox users get it initially, how does a developer reliably test their site? You could have users seeing different layouts.
That sounds tricky.
It is, but the counterargument was also there. Developers should be using things like browser beta versions and feature flags to test for exactly these kind of upstream changes.
And the idealist view.
Right. The purist view is that a well-built website should be robust enough to handle variations, even user-defined styles or having JavaScript turned off. It shouldn't break that easily.
It taps into that bigger philosophical debate too, doesn't it? Is the web for documents or applications?
Exactly. How much control should the developer have versus the user? Some people still yearn for a simpler, document-centric web.
Okay, staying on the foundational tech theme, let's quickly touch on Fedora and reproducibility.
Yeah, Fedora change aims for 99% package reproducibility. This one's important for software integrity.
So reproducible builds, what's the quick explanation?
It means if you compile the exact same source code twice, or on two different machines, you get bit-for-bit identical binary output every single time.
And Fedora is aiming for 99% of their packages to meet that standard. That sounds ambitious.
It is, and really important. Why? Because it builds trust.
How so?
If builds are reproducible, it's much harder for someone to sneak malicious code into the build process without it being detected later when someone else tries to reproduce the build from the same source. It's a key part of securing the software supply chain, especially for open source.
Got it. So it's about verification and trust in the code you're actually running.
Precisely. Okay, now, a major shift in topic, and this one is quite sensitive and generated a lot of heated discussion.
Right. This involves the articles about leaked data from Meta, specifically concerning the removal of pro-Palestine posts on Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah, this is a heavy one. The reports, based on alleged leaked internal data, claim to show a concerted campaign potentially involving the Israeli government to get certain content taken down.
And the data apparently showed a very high percentage of these requests, like 95%, were flagged under serious categories like terrorism or violence and incitement.
Correct. And critically, these requests were overwhelmingly directed at content from users in Arab and Muslim-majority countries.
Which obviously raises immediate flags about potential censorship and bias against criticism of Israel.
Absolutely. The discussion highlighted Meta's different moderation paths. You've got standard user reports, often getting an initial AI pass.
Uh-huh.
And then you have these government or official organization takedown requests, which apparently get higher priority and are almost always looked at by human moderators.
And the allegation here is that Meta was highly compliant with the Israeli requests, sometimes even bypassing standard procedures for those government accounts, while still using the outcomes to train their AI.
That's the claim reported in the articles and discussed on Hacker News. The Human Rights Watch report was also mentioned.
What did that find?
It apparently documented numerous cases of takedowns or suppression, finding the vast majority targeted pro-Palestine content that seemed peaceful, while finding very few comparable actions against pro-Israel content.
This brings Jordana Cutler into the picture, Meta's policy director for Israel. Her background working for Netanyahu was definitely noted.
Right. The allegation is that she actively flagged pro-Palestine content, with specific examples mentioned, like targeting mentions of the Palestinian writer Ghassan Kanafani.
And the justification used.
It apparently falls under Meta's policies against glorifying individuals linked to organizations designated as violent threat. Kanafani had historical links to the PFLP. It's complex, dealing with historical figures and shifting designations.
Extremely complex. The core claim seems to be that Meta knew about these alleged tactics, but essentially provided a pathway for them.
That was certainly a perspective raised in the discussion, and it led to broader questions like, does this make Facebook function more like a publisher than a neutral platform?
And what does that mean for their legal protections, like Section 230? Big questions about accountability.
Huge questions.
Yeah.
Of course, the counter perspective was also there. Is it censorship, or is it a private company enforcing its own terms of service, however controversially? And the sheer difficulty of judging content, especially determining what counts as peaceful versus incitement in such a charged context.
It's an incredibly polarized issue. The Hacker News comments definitely showed that, reflecting the deep divisions and the immense challenge of content moderation on a global scale. We're just reporting on the discussion here, not taking sides.
Exactly. It highlights the power these platforms have and the impossible tightrope they walk. Okay, let's pivot to something significantly lighter.
Please, my brain needs it. The live map of the London Underground.
Yes, just a cool real-time visualization of the tube trains moving around. Simple concept, but people seem to really enjoy it. Did you look?
I did. It's strangely hypnotic, isn't it? Watching the little dots zip around.
Totally. The discussion brought up Transport for London, TFL, the organization behind it, mentioned their recent cyber issues, but also praised their history with things like contactless payments. London was way ahead on that.
Yeah, they have a track record of innovation there. Someone in the comments also offered a really neat, simple analogy for APIs.
Oh, what was it? Since the map must use an API for the live data.
They said an API is like a website, but for code instead of people. I thought that was pretty good for explaining how systems talk to each other.
That is good. Very clear. And it turned into a bit of a show and tell, with people linking similar live maps for Tokyo, Vienna, Warsaw.
St. Petersburg, too, I think. Seems like real-time transit data is becoming standard fare in big cities.
It is. Makes sense. There was some user feedback on the London map, too. Little quirks.
Right. Like the arrival times being in UTC, not local time. Bit confusing.
And some visual things, like trains occasionally vanishing when you zoom, or how they float above the buildings. Minor stuff, likely fixable.
And my favorite comment was the one remembering an old text-based adventure game set on the tube.
Huh. Yes.
Yes.
Which then sparked the idea of making a new one using the real-time data from the map, maybe even with virtual souvenirs.
No, that would be cool. Merging retro gaming with live data feeds.
Definitely a fun idea. And someone pointed out the developer included a donation link, a reminder that running these kinds of services isn't free. Bandwidth costs money.
Good point. So, wow, we've really covered some ground today. From the philosophy of product design and user needs.
To the complexities of web standards and software trust, then into the deep, difficult waters of content moderation.
And finally, a relaxing ride watching virtual trains on the underground. A true Hacker News smorgasbord.
It really was. Hopefully this deep dive gave everyone listening a solid overview of these conversations without needing to wade through hundreds of comments. That's the goal, right?
Exactly. A shortcut to the core ideas being discussed in the tech community.
And maybe a final thought to leave our listeners with, something to chew on. thinking about that tension between optimizing for the average user versus the enthusiast and the pressures of platform moderation. What responsibility do tech companies truly have in shaping not just our tools, but our access to information and even our preferences?
That balance between convenience, broad engagement, and perhaps deeper, more specialized needs or uncomfortable truths, where does that balance lie?
Something to ponder. Thanks for tuning into the HN Pod.